Louder Than Life is back with Ozzy Osbourne and a rare appearance from Prophets of Rage. Louder Than Life, Saturday, September 30th and Sunday, October 1st. Go to louderthanlifefestival.com for everything.
What's up, Loudmouths? This is Ivan Moody from the one and only Five Finger Death Punch. Just letting you know we are coming to Kentucky for the Louder Than Life, September 30th and October 1st. If you don't have your tickets yet, you better get them before it's sold out. The Louder Than Life Festival. I'll see you there. LouderThanLifeFestival.com.
Hey guys, you're listening to another episode of Redefining the Counterculture right here on Witten Radio. Today we've got a special guest for you. Well, actually a group of special guests. We're joined by filmmakers Andrew Lamont and Colin Dowdett. Guys, how's it going?
Good.
Awesome, awesome. I'll see you guys about your newest film, Out of Nothing. Really, really inspirational. It's a cool film. I feel like even if you're a person that's not into, you know, racing or motorsports or off-road type of life, you know, off-road driving or, you know, action sports or whatever, I still feel like this film has something for everybody. The film really sucked me in from, like, just the opening shot, and I just love what you guys have done. I think that you put your heart and your soul into this film, and it's definitely apparent when I see the finished product. Tell me a little bit about how this film first came to, fruition. What was the thought behind it, and what was it that led you guys to, its inception?
So the initial spark for this film, our director, Chad DeRosa, was he'd been a photographer for quite a while leading up to his work on this film, and he decided to turn on his, you know, video camera, start shooting some footage of a few of these motorcycle builders from Bellingham, Washington, as they were, you know, hand building different bikes in their garages off, you know, just pennies. And their hope was to build bikes to set land speed records on the Salt Flats in Utah, and they didn't really have the resources or money to compete, you know, on any kind of high level, so they were using their skill sets and, you know, each other's know-how to really compensate for that. And Chad thought it was a pretty interesting thing to follow, and, you know, wasn't looking to necessarily do a feature film, and started following these guys for a couple years, just kind of through the bike building process, and ended up going down to Bonneville, Utah on the Salt Flats with them, you know, for their first time racing down there. And what he started capturing ended up turning into something far more special than he had originally set out to do. And, you know, before long, he realized that he had material that could be put together on a much greater scale than what he originally thought. And, you know, saw something special forming. And when that happened, he got a hold of us, Colin and I's company, P51 Pictures, and started talking to us about forming this into a 90-minute feature film to tell a full story. And so we brought our team on board and joined Chad. And he had been filming for a couple years before we even came on board and, you know, helped him to shape it into the movie. And so it really started with Chad just deciding to follow these guys and seeing a story, you know, as it, from the beginning, as it started unfolding.
Wow. So what was the filming process like? I know that, you know, you probably had a number of hot and humid days. You know, obviously, you know, there may have been, you know, some injuries on set and so on and so forth. Was it particularly arduous to film this, to work this out, so to speak?
Yeah, and you're talking on the Salt Flats in Utah. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so shooting on the Salt Flats poses all sorts of issues. I mean, it's beautiful. You're out there. It's like another landscape from a, you know, from another planet. It's a lot of people who've never been there. It's hard to describe. I mean, it's literally just a flat of white salt, and it's 46 square miles of it, so it's easy to get lost out there and not know how far you are from, you know, the one road that can lead onto the salt. And the reason they race there is because there's, you know, the ground is so flat, and they have an unbroken stretch of 11 miles where they can get up to speed, and they're clocked in the middle of this in the timed mile in the middle of this 11-mile stretch, and then they can slow back down. And it's hard for people to fathom the amount of space that that covers. That there's multiple towns that could be fit into the length of this course. And so when you're filming as a production crew, some of the difficulties that come about, of course, are the hot days. You can get in the 100-degree temperatures, and it bounces off the white salt so hard that it can burn you up your shorts and under your chin. And
you're
constantly having to stay hydrated and reapplying sunscreen. And when we put our team out on the course to capture the footage, you know, it's not like sending somebody down or around a corner, you know, around the bend. You're sending part of your crew, you know, it could be up to 5 miles away. And so radios become a problem, and you start communicating through your cell phones as best you can. And then kind of another factor that everybody battles is the damage that the salt can do to your equipment and vehicles. And it makes a lot of the processes we have to do to film very taxing, and you just have to be aware of what those conditions bring to a film team and try to, you know, prepare as best possible in advance.
Absolutely. What was, the preparation for the pre-production that went into creating this film? Because I know that you guys had to have done some rigorous, you know, location scouting, I would imagine, but also just like you said, the wear and tear that the salt, you know, did on your equipment. I mean, all that stuff had to have been planned and talked about before. It's like, and just, you know, basically, you know, doing your best to ensure that, you know, this film would get made.
Yeah, well, right off the bat, I mean, we knew where it needed to be filmed. I mean, we shot, about a third of the film in Bellingham, Washington, and Seattle area, where the four men that the film followed, they're from the Pacific Northwest. And so we did a lot of filming up there so you could see the bikes being built and in their garages and their homes with their families. So so you got to know these guys prior to seeing their racing on the salt flats, and you got to care about them, you know, before they put their helmet on. And so Chad had already filmed for a couple years, just kind of pretty much flying solo, capturing footage, following them in the Pacific Northwest and then also down at the salt flats. And when we came on with the rest of the team to help really build a film out of this, we did take a crew of about 15 down to the salt flats to truly capture the event, because these guys race as part of a motorcycle speed race event. And there's hundreds of other bikers also trying to set land speed records. And to capture the scope and the scale of that on a place like the Salt Flats with a lot of people, that was where our production really had to come in. Because Chad had captured a lot of the story already, and we needed to really lift the scale. I mean, you see this location, and you see the speeds these guys are trying to reach. And, you know, we sit down as a production team and decide, okay, we need to focus on the human story of this, but this is where they're doing this, and what they're doing is a very, very grand type of setting. And so we need to make a film that is worthy of putting up on a big screen and playing in theaters and really, you know, take the audience on a ride and you know, send them through an experience. And so a lot of the decisions we made in prepping for the big shoots and how we were going to tell the story were guided by making sure people knew who these human beings were and truly sending them through a race so they could see how dangerous it was and really focus on what these guys were passionate about. So.
Absolutely. I kind of want to jump ahead. You and Colin wore multiple hats for this film. I mean, you yourself, you're, I guess, what you'd call an executive producer, and you're also the composer for this film. And then Colin, you know, has done special effects. He was an associate producer. Had you guys worked together before? I mean, because the synergy and the amount of creativity that went into this film, you can tell by the finished product. It just seems like you guys are you know, longtime friends. Did you guys know each other beforehand? Had you worked together before?
Yeah, we, out of the entire crew, we were the two that knew each other the longest. Colin and I had been working together since, 2002. We met in in school at the university up where in Bellingham, Washington, and have worked together ever since. And we formed P51 Pictures kind of shortly out of college and started developing our production team and people that we, you know, trusted and we work with. And, you know, we worked with on smaller projects. And when this came up, we really called on those people that had proven themselves time and time again to be just amazing artists. You know, and when you're doing a documentary on a smaller budget and trying to tell a story on the scale, you know, in which out of nothing had to be told, you really do have to find people who are amazing at what they do because they're going to have to wear multiple hats. You just don't have the money to do this on a studio scale, but you have to try to emulate a studio film. So you need the right people, and that was real important to us going into this. And I was just finishing up editing a comedy pilot with Brian Stiles, who's our other producer from The Drew Carey Show and Whose Line Is It Anyway, and asked him if he would be interested in jumping on board. We had a good working relationship, and he said yes. And he's not known for, you know, dramatic documentaries by any means. He's known for comedy, but he was a great asset to the production as well. He was able to make connections with people that could, you know, help get the film distributed or at the very least seen so they could see, you know, how well it turned out. And then the rest of the team, it's a pretty small crew of people who are very talented in multiple areas. And that's what we had to lean on when you're dealing with very little money and a story of that scale. That was important. And Colin and I, from working together for so long, it's easy for us to, you know, to lean on each other where one of us has strengths, the other one has weaknesses. And so when we're assembling a team, we really try to keep that in mind. It's like, who can we trust where we can't do something and vice versa, you know?
Absolutely. Tell me, so I know that you scored this film. How did you, I guess, find the right music, the right score for this film? It just seems like everything just flows together like peanut butter and jelly. Did you ever, I mean, were there any hiccups or was there a time in the process where you struggled to find the right music or the right score for certain parts?
Yeah. The music is a tricky part, and what can happen when you're putting together a film, as a lot of filmmakers know, is you start using what's called temp music. You have something in place until you score it, and so as a producer, you know, myself, Colin, and the director and the editor, you get very familiar with just the temp tracks you have in place to give yourself an idea of what you want that scene or scenes to feel like, and so you drop music that's already been made in there and you give yourself an idea. But then you try to keep in the back of your mind, like, we're going to be generating original music for this. But what that does, if you don't get too married to it so much to where it bothers you when the temp track isn't there anymore, if you really understand what the temp music brings to the scene and what it is you like about it and what you're trying to convey in the scene, it helps to decide how the actual original score needs to come out. And in our process with this film, there wasn't a lot of time when we finished the editing process to do the music. And something that helped was that being a producer on the project, I mean, obviously I was involved when we continued filming and started editing. So the other composer I work with, there were two of us that did that process. And I would always make sure we were taking scenes home throughout the editing process and starting to practice and get ready for what we needed to do. So we didn't, you know, right after editing, we only had 2 or 3 months to finish the score. That allowed us to get a glimpse of everything in advance and start working with it. Especially when we hardly had any budget, you try to cut as many corners as you can and do yourself as many favors as possible as early in the process as possible to save time and money. And in our case, we did a lot of the composing on the computer, and we were looking to do kind of a rock score and orchestral score and combine those because you have the motorcycle racing community that's going to be watching this film, and you have people that are going to watch this film that aren't associated with the motorcycle community, but maybe you're there focusing on the bicyclist, you know, and for their passion and their drive for what they're doing, the human story. and we really wanted to try to mix those. And so we did a lot of the composing on the computer, and we would have students from the symphony orchestra in our local university come in and record those tracks. So we would get horns and violins and strings, and we would give them a little bit of money, what we could afford, but they would also get credit at school, and they were some of the top students in the orchestra. So we were really able to achieve the rock meets orchestral feel for this film, but it was not by any stretch the normal means of doing that for a film. But sometimes you just have to improvise.
Absolutely, absolutely. What would you say was like the most particular thing that you enjoyed most about creating this film? Because I know that filmmaking, you know, and we're going to get into this a little bit later, but filmmaking, you know, is a process. I mean, you're literally, you know, birthing out something that has been in you for, you know, an extended amount of time, and it's no easy task. Like, a lot of people, they just see the finished product, and they're like, oh, I could do that. Oh, that looks simple enough, but there's a science behind it. There's so much that goes into it. But there's also a fun aspect of it. You yourself, what would you say, I guess, was the most enjoyable aspect of creating this film?
Well, I think the enjoyable aspect of creating it, it's not, as a producer, it's nice to see something that you've put all your efforts and other people's efforts in, because if you select a project, you know, and you have team members that come on because you believe in it and they want to follow you there. A nice part about this was watching how it's been received, because you spend so much time and effort putting work into this, hours and hours, long nights, all-nighters, everything. And when you see how an audience responds, that becomes a really nice part, and it makes all the parts of the process worth it, because you're wondering the whole time, like, boy, do we need to spend time here, or should we stop and put our efforts in this area? So I think seeing it at the end and how people respond is really nice from a producer's perspective. But then just being able to tell a story, like being able to work in a career where you can tell stories for a living, there's something about that. And, you know, we get to be in the editing room and watch the story unfold. And in a documentary, it's not scripted. And so it was exciting for us to watch the real events unfold as we were working on the film. Because you hope, when you're following something that's happening real time, you hope for the best results, and you hope for something that can connect to audiences and inspire them. But you never know. And Colin played a lot bigger part in helping see the story in that much footage. I mean, there was, when we were all done, there was over 100 hours of footage, and you have to tell the right story in 90 minutes. Jeez. And try to be as accurate as possible to what happened, and you have to abbreviate a lot. And our goal was to make sure that, you know, we stayed true to what happened. There's a lot of documentaries that take many, many creative freedoms beyond what we think they should do. And so we really tried to be as accurate as possible, you know, and convey the information. But doing that, you know, the racing sequences could have taken up the entire film, but we needed to make sure we showed who these guys were before they got there, and, you know, made sure people cared about them before they raced and understood why they were doing that. So watching the story unfold and making sure we could fit that into the 90-minute time frame was nice to see. And like I said, you never know how it's going to go, but if you have all your elements and all your tools at the ready and you capture it, then it's a great feeling.
Absolutely. You know, as a creator, it's you know, it's hard to, I guess, in layman's terms, you know, destroy what you've created or, you know, have to do away with. You yourself as a filmmaker, do you ever struggle in the editing process just having to trim away so much, you know, to create that finished product? Is it ever, I mean, I'd imagine it'd be quite stressful.
Yeah. Boy, how would you respond to that? Cutting out things. I mean, when you're in the editing room, you see so many variations of your own project, and it gets shaped, things get cut, things get added, and trying to decide what stays in and what goes becomes very tricky, especially, like you said, if we've had something in there for a while or for a long time, we felt that this was very important, and and you're watching it and you're thinking, boy, this is great, but it's not strong enough to be a part of this 90-minute story, and so there's a lot of different things that get cut that it's heartbreaking sometimes, especially when you've worked with it for so long or have you envisioned it being a part of the story, but you have to be able to say, this, as much as we love this, it's not what's right for the story to keep this in here, or to at least tell the story that we're telling right now.
Absolutely. I wanted to ask you, now you guys had a red carpet screening of this film, I believe this last week, and the guest list was amazing. I think one of the guests...
It's actually tomorrow night.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
No, that's all right. Yeah, it's coming up tomorrow night in Beverly Hills.
Yeah, it's got a pretty star-studded red carpet. Charlie Sheen is expected to show, amongst many others. How do you guys feel? Have the feelings of euphoria taken over yet, or are you still kind of nervous? How do you feel about the screening?
You know, having the screening now, we finished the film a couple years back, and we're already actually filming on the next documentary. And I think how we feel about this screening is we feel very fortunate that it's gotten where it has. When you're doing a documentary, you know it's going to be a struggle to bring it to any screen. Such a few number of documentaries that are produced every year actually make it into distribution, let alone get a theatrical release. So we feel very lucky, you know, to see it get to this point, but yet we know the amount of work that went into it from an incredible team. And so to have it, it's been released in 20 or more other countries, including the UK and Japan and Australia, but to see it finally being released in the US, kind of on your home turf, it's a proud feeling, and you get excited. It's like that's what you want. You want to see that come back to your own territory, and all these people who've heard about what you were doing and maybe didn't get a chance to see it, in little advanced screenings or film festivals, now get to see it, and we'll have access to it in theaters and video on demand and DVD, Blu-ray. That's a good feeling. So
absolutely. And I know that the film is screening, tomorrow night, as you said. It's finally getting released here in the U.S. Do you know when it will be available for video on demand, or will there be any select film theater showings?
Yes. So the plan is tomorrow night kicks off the U.S. theatrical launch, and so it'll be playing in limited locations around the U.S. And I believe the distributors have it planned that it'll be playing in Washington and Utah first, because that's the majority of the filming took place in both of those states. And then it'll play in select areas around the country over the next several months. The video on demand release comes October 3rd, I believe. And then November, right at the beginning of November, DVD and Blu-ray sales go up in time for the holiday season. So having Uncorked Entertainment was the team that came on to distribute the film, and they've just been incredible. You know, you hope for somebody that's that excited about the film and putting as much effort as they have into the release of this film. It was nice to be connected with them and have them feel so strongly about the project we created.
Absolutely. You spoke on this just a few minutes ago, but you said that a lot of documentary filmmakers, they take creative liberties when they are creating a documentary. In your own words or your own advice or just your own thoughts, what would you say, qualifies or would be classified as a good documentary? Like, because you're a filmmaker yourself, what would you say makes a good documentary?
We try not to editorialize a lot. Just kind of let the story flow as it is, and just literally try to document the story. So I think sometimes modern documentaries can be more editorial pieces. So we try to, at least in this world we're following with the motorsports, we just try to document it and really get to know why these people are so driven.
Absolutely. You two are the masterminds, you know, the creators of this film. And, you know, a lot of people are going to watch this film and, you know, take their own meaning, their own interpretation of the film and, you know, the people involved. But you yourselves, what is the biggest takeaway that you want people to get from this film when they go to see it?
Well, it's funny, when we were making the movie up in Bellingham, as we were putting together the story, we started to realize it was running parallel to our own story, in that it's a story about big dreams and passions and putting all of life's troubles aside just for a little bit to be able to work on something that you have a passion for and create something literally out of nothing. And we felt that we were doing that with the movie as we were following these guys do that with their racing machines. So if anything, I've talked to different people who've watched it, and a big takeaway that we hope people have is that if you have a dream or a passion, you need to make that passion and dream a reality. You need to work on it. You need to make something out of nothing.
Yeah, if people walk away from the theater or even from their home screens just ready to conquer the world and feel that inspired, I'll feel like we did our job right. And like Colin said, that really parallels our story. And it very much follows the story of our director, Chad, who started the entire thing with these guys before we even came on board. And he's all about living life to the fullest and taking chances for what you care about. And that translated into the entire film and to the entire production team. So it became a story we really knew how to tell, or at least we felt we did, based on what we were trying to do as well. So if people leave and they're inspired and they want to, you know, go try to put some work into that passion they always thought about but never did, or if they're already doing that, if they leave the theater and are like, boy, I just got to work harder, I can do it, then I feel like we will have done our jobs right.
Absolutely. I think, you know, what you guys said is really good. I mean, you know, like you said, it's, you know, if you've got a dream, if you've got a passion, a goal, you've got to get it out. I mean, there's no sense in just sitting on these dreams and letting them die with you, you know. To me, that was really, it was really moving because it really hit home, amongst other things. But, yeah, you guys did a hell of a job with this film, and I'm super excited to see, you know, what's next for you guys. I know that you talked a little bit about your next project. Are you able to share any of it with us? Or?
Yeah, we can. So essentially we're following some teams that are going for the world record on a motorcycle, land speed record, and trying to shatter the 400-mile-per-hour barrier on two wheels. And so it also, you know, is in a similar world, but it's we're following three very different types of teams. You essentially have one team that has really no money, and they're going up against two big budget teams. And so it's a race, but it's also another glimpse inside of the human spirit and how far people are willing to go for, you know, their passion and what they care about.
Absolutely. Do you guys have a projected release date for that,
since it's difficult to nail it down completely because we're following real time events again, but projected it would be later next summer would probably be a realistic time.
Okay. Very cool. And where can our listening audience find out more about you guys and keep abreast of your current and upcoming projects?
Well, we have. You could go to p51pictures.com to follow our project, but to follow Out of Nothing, this film, Uncorked Entertainment's website, and we have an official Facebook page for Out of Nothing. They can go there, and we keep everybody posted as to what's happening, when the film is playing where, and what they can look forward to, and how they can see it.
Very nice. Well, guys, thank you so much. I'm all out of questions, but I wanted to thank you so much for joining me on today's show, and I wanted to open the floor to you if there's anything you'd like to say to our listening audience.
You know, I really appreciate the opportunity. It's again, I know there's a lot of filmmakers that are working on projects of their own, hoping they get a chance to have an interview on the radio or have other people hear about their process or hear about their projects, and we just appreciate the opportunity to do that. So thanks for opening that up to us, and yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. Anytime. Like I love the work that you guys do, and I think it's not only awe inspiring, it's inspiring, you know. And it's just it was really cool to sit and talk with you guys about this film. I wish I could attend the screening, the red carpet screening, but you know, unfortunately, due to my location, that might be a little bit hard. But I'm definitely looking forward to you know, it being released for VOD because, you know, the holidays coming up, you know, definitely need some stocking stuffers and some gift ideas. So
perfect.
The timing is much perfect. So
well, and let's just see if we can get it back to Tennessee in a couple more screenings as well. So.
Hey, I would love that.
Well, thanks a lot for the time and letting us be here. I appreciate it.
No problem. No problem at all. Thank you so much, guys.
You bet. Have a good one.
You as well.
This is Redefining the Counterculture on Witten Radio. Make sure to check out our website at wittenradio.com.